Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, I'm Matt Shawley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, the latest Times Radio focus group this month, with people who voted Conservative in 2019 now leaning towards the Lib Dems. We asked them what they make of Rishi Sunak, and do they know anything about the Lib Dems? It's a cracking listen, actually, and it's probably one of those areas of what's going on in politics right now that isn't talked about enough. In The Economist's Manveen Rana, joined by Matthew Syed, talking about the hospital pass that Rishi Sunak was given when he became Prime Minister, and a reminder of a time when politics was quite good. And don't forget, if you like what you hear on the podcast, don't forget you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits on Times Radio, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. And the irony monitors are off the charts today. Yeah, there's everywhere you look, there's irony. There's just irony. The monitors are going mad. Rishi Sunak. Sorry, it's not your radio. It's a Geiger counter. It's a Geiger counter. Rishi Sunak complains about his job.
Someone described it as the worst hospital pass for any incoming Prime Minister in however many decades.
Yeah, but nobody can get a pass into the hospital because of record waiting lists and doctor strikes. Keir Starmer launched his campaign, promising to keep council tax bills low, while everyone wants to know if Angela Rayner has paid her council tax. Lord Geitz, here's one for the irony counter. Lord Geitz, Boris Johnson's ethics and standards advisor, has been caught, yes, you guessed it, breaking ethics and standards rules, assisting an outside organisation in influencing government officials at the Ministry of Defence. Then there's the boat rate. It's just going to sound like there's something wrong with your radio. There's the boat rate. Sorry, this is my fault. It seemed like a good idea. Then there's the boat race where the rowers have been told not to get wet. The doctor saying don't eat an Easter egg in one go to protect the NHS. And the Tory MP launching a campaign to open a fish and chip shop in the borough where the Tory council, yes, turned down an application for a fish and chip shop. Should have rehearsed that or something. It's my fault. It's my idea. Somebody, producer Erin's not happy. Well, that should be all right when she's on weekend overnight.
Manveen Rana and someone called Matthew on Times Radio.
Yeah, so Manveen Rana is here. How are you, Manveen?
Hello, I'm very well.
And we're joined this week's Matthew is Matthew Syed. Hello, Matthew.
Hi. Am I allowed to give a very quick wrong place?
Yes, when have you been in the wrong place?
Anecdote. So I, in my teens, in my table tennis days, was playing for a club in Norway, Bergen, one of their big cities. And I would fly out to Bergen to play league matches. But one summer, they asked me to go out for a training camp. And I said, can I come along with my best friend from school, Mark? And they said, yeah, do. But we, instead of flying, we wanted to go cheaply. So we went to the travel agent. Do you remember the student travel agency, STA Travel?
Yeah.
This is at... Reading University, and we said we want to get to Bergen in Norway, and they said, you're not going to believe it. There's an incredibly cheap coach trip from Reading town centre to Bergen. And it, you know, it's something like 50 quid. So me and Mark said, fantastic, got on this bus, two 16-year-olds having fun and talking to the other people on the bus, singing and making fools of ourselves. And then we go on a ferry, and anyway, we're driving through the German countryside, and the driver said, we'll be arriving at Bergen in about 45 minutes if you want to get your stuff ready. And I turned around to Mark and I said, this is amazing. I had no idea Norway was so close to Germany. And somebody in the coach overheard and said, Norway? And it was actually going to Bergen in Germany. So we arrive at this bus stop, almost no money. And then it's an epic story, and I won't go into it. We hitchhiked from Bergen in Germany to Bergen in Norway.
Wow.
We hitchhiked all the way. And I had my passport stolen in Copenhagen, train station, all of my bags. We had to go to the ambassador to get a replacement. Interpol. This is before mobile phones. So my parents got a call from the people greeting who were supposed to be meeting us in Bergen and said they haven't arrived. Interpol was on the case. Remarkable story. But it made me laugh hearing your theme for the day.
Honestly, Matt, it's such a funny story, the Just Stop Oil people who turned up outside West Streeting's house. They were all like, where are you, Met Police? Why aren't you stopping me doing this? And it's because it's not his house. Oh, it's funny. Now, Manvi, what have you got there?
I bought cupcakes, Easter cupcakes.
Have you? Did you make these?
I baked them this morning.
Did you?
Yeah.
You've missed out here, Matthew.
Oh, wow.
They're lemony.
Oh, my goodness.
Enjoy.
Do you eat this around the outside?
I mean, good luck. I think, yeah, it's got a little thing that you can tear.
Okay.
Outside.
Lovely. Well, we better get on and talk about what we're supposed to be talking about then. Oh, yes. Now, Manveen, obviously host previously of Stories of Our Times. Now, The Story.
The Story.
How many times have you called it the wrong name?
I mean, they've edited it out,
yeah, it's
thankfully.
Fine, yeah. So it's The Story.
It helps it's shorter.
One story told in depth each day, podcast from The Times. Once a month, William Hague is going to do a big interview, and he's kicked off today. I mean, he's set the bar quite high. Yeah, I'll get the Prime Minister. It helps that they know each other because Rishi Sunak replaced William Hague as the MP in Richmond. And he told William Hague how hard it was to inherit a chaotic and messy period of government.
Someone described it as the worst hospital pass for any incoming Prime Minister in however many decades. And no, clearly it's been there's lots of frustrations. We've been through a lot as a country over the past few years, which people are understandably frustrated about. It makes the environment trickier. But I'm entirely confident that there are better times ahead. And in spite of the challenges that the country's been through, you know, whether that's COVID, the pandemic, the impact of that on everyone, and just as we were recovering from that to get hit by a war in Ukraine and the impact on energy bills, that's a tough few years.
So, I mean, there was something I thought ironic about him talking about a hospital pass on the day we're told it. Satisfaction with hospitals is an all-time low.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, even
yeah,
if he
clearly didn't see that coming.
I thought it was interesting, the interview, because he seemed to open up a bit more because he obviously knew William.
Yeah.
But not a huge amount more, given, you know, he's still quite buttoned up.
And
even when given the opportunity to do the thing which Danny Finkelstein has said loads of times, he has to draw a line under Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. And
very reluctant to do
he
it.
He still won't do it.
The furthest he went was that hospital pass comment,
but
which
even
I
that
think
was,
is further than he has in the past.
But even that was sort of that attributed is, secondhand.
Yeah. And he, you know, this is such a rare interview. You know, normally you're up against sort of somebody who's just trying to catch you out.
Yeah.
You don't have the space to do that. What he had here was a previous leader of the Tory party talking about how difficult it was when he came in, you know, to inherit the party in a really low moment, which gives him the ability to say, well, yeah, I know the feeling. You know, it was the perfect opportunity to open up. He couldn't have had sort of a more understanding, you know, this is sort of a chat amongst peers.
Yeah.
People have gone through the same experience. And yet the furthest he would go was that hospital pass comment, which I think was, for him, a missed opportunity.
And there's only so many of these opportunities that are going
to
come out. I mean, I've been saying it for a while now, Matthew, that, you know, that distancing yourself from Liz Truss, kicking her out of the Tory party, is a victimless crime. And it's the one thing the entire country could get behind.
I don't...
It's a fair point. I have to say, though, that when Sunak describes this as a hospital pass, you've got to say he... I mean, first of all, it's a pass from somebody in his own party. But if you go a bit further back, I try to be sympathetic to politicians because I used to want to be one, and I can see that they're juggling difficult and often contradictory demands. Public isn't always on side. But I do think many of these wounds are self-inflicted. And Sunak voted for Brexit. I was against it, as many others were. I don't think it's worked out quite as he and the supporters of it intended. He voted for Boris Johnson when many people thought that this was somebody who was eminently unsuitable for high office. He's been in the cabinet during a period, I think, of really quite despicable corruption, the normalization of corruption. And on the two of the biggest issues of our time, policy towards China throughout the period from 2010 and towards Russia, has largely been profoundly mistaken strategically. So, you know, a hospital pass, one from his own party, and one that he was partly partly passing to himself, I think, is the metaphor I'm trying to go over.
So that hospital pass being, because we were talking about, in the team, not everyone knew, hospital pass being, is it a rugby thing that somebody throws, it's a pass which you're basically going to get clattered by everyone, and then you'll end up in hospital?
Yeah, well, actually, I've heard it in football where the pass isn't fast enough to get to you. So it's now a 50-50 ball between you and an opposition player, and you go in together, and it's where you can get terrible, terrible injury. So it's a poorly executed pass that leaves the person who's supposed to be the recipient in danger of mortal injury.
It's basically you're somebody passes to you, but you're going to get...
I think Matthew is the authority on sporting metaphors.
Well, let's try and be positive for a moment about politics. So last night I watched Tom Allen, the comedian, had a documentary, BBC One, called The Big Gay Wedding, marking the 10th anniversary of same-sex marriage. And it was great. So he was, Tom Allen, helping a couple plan a same-sex marriage, while also telling the story of how over almost like 40, 50 years, social attitudes have changed and politicians have changed. And Tom Allen interviewed David Cameron. Yeah. Let's just take a listen.
I have to admit, my wife, Samantha, played quite a big part in it because I remember this conversation we had when I was explaining, look, civil partnerships deal with a lot of the discrimination. And she said, you're missing the point. This is about equality. This is about saying to people, I want to be married just like you're married. And that was the sort of light bulb that went off with me.
A lot of people in the queer community might say, well, the Tory party is responsible for Section 28, for example. So it was really going against the grain.
Well, I think we had ground to make up for some of the discrimination of the past, and that got a big round of applause.
But you must have stood to lose something personally here. I mean, you were sort of breaking with some of the grassroots support for the party, I think. And...
Well, it was difficult in the Conservative Party. They didn't understand why we were doing it. So it was a struggle, and there certainly was a rebellion.
Matthew, watching it, part of me just thought, hey, what a brilliant thing. There's an hour-long documentary on primetime, BBC One, about a political campaign decision that over time, and it talked about how civil partnerships being passed by the Labour Party and then the coalition government went further and did full-blown marriage. And it's a sort of lasting thing then. It made me slightly more positive and optimistic about politics rather than the constant sort of, oh, what's Simona Braverman got to say about Lee Anderson, got to say about when she's, you know, stuffed it politics, you know. And we might in 10 years' time, I also sort of wonder what in 10 years' time would we be marking. But, you know, politics over a long period with some bravery and cross-party working and all of that, it can change people's lives.
Oh, my life has been transformed by this shift in social attitudes towards race. It's not perfect. Racism hasn't been eliminated. But I remember vividly growing up in the 70s and 80s and getting called the P word, not just by other students, but by some of my teachers, getting rejected by the first girl I asked out, Yvonne, for being the wrong colour, coaches in table. I remember going to a tournament in New Delhi in my teens, world championship, and being called the most horrible names by other people in the England team that I was there to represent. And I don't want to say I had a wonderful upbringing, fantastic parents, some very, very good friends, but I was always conscious that there were people willing to campaign against racism, often white people as well. And it was a fantastic thing to behold. And as I say, now racism hasn't been eliminated, but my life has genuinely been transformed by the shift in social attitude. So I'd definitely mention Harold Wilson and the Race Relations Act, some of the tremendous campaigning that went on politically. But I'd also say that, as with gay marriage, these are bottom-up transformations as well. Politicians are leading, but they're also responding to the demands that are emerging from society. And I feel absolutely tremendous gratitude to those people who were pioneers in this when it wasn't fashionable. Not always politicians, but social campaigners and people, you know, who supported my father at work when he was a victim of racism. Great change, and one that I feel eternally grateful for.
Yeah, that's really, that's an incredibly moving account. And I, you know, Matthew's right. I do think politics is often like the final seal on a cultural movement that's begun from the grassroots. I think that's absolutely right. I thought that passage from that documentary, though, does make you think also, kudos to Sam Cam.
Yeah.
You know, that's quite something. For, you know, given that in recent years we've sort of been so used to hearing the toxic effects of, you know, sort of Carrie Johnson interfering and things like that. Actually, what a reassuring moment here, sort of just like a little bit of judgment, a little bit of sort of nudging someone towards the right decision and giving a bit of a sense check from the outside world.
Because I thought it was interesting, because David Cameron, being the politician, was looking at it from a sort of purely legislative, well, all the legal rights you get from marriage, you're getting from civil partnership. And actually, someone just
without
one step removed
leading to a rebellion in the
could
party.
Just say, but it's not just about, it's about, you know, it is about
it
having the
so
day, having the moment, and having equality. The equality of the party as much as the, you know, the technicalities.
And could understand that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, sort of a much more emotive issue.
Yeah.
So I sort of thought, you know, how nice that she gets recognised in the history of all of
this. And also kudos to him, because it was, I mean, in the documentary, there were clips from 2014 of MPs and peers standing up in Parliament and saying, it's about a man and a woman, it's about having babies, it's going against the natural.
I remember covering it.
But that's only 10 years ago.
Yeah, and a world apart.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just as big, sort of a and almost more unexpected when it was voted for in Ireland. And they had that fantastic campaign where they had people going home to vote. And it sort of felt like, you know, the climax of a Hollywood movie where all these people suddenly appeared at the last minute. You know, the cavalry sort of rides in to vote for the future. It was such a positive, reaffirming moment.
So that's good. We're being nice and positive and reaffirming about
politics can do good.
I know, and that's what I think. Yeah, that's and it's a reminder of that. And I thought it was just a great, you know, populist documentary about a big social change and all the people who played a role in it. So it was nice. Now, do you want to watch a documentary about Theresa May's premiership? Well, you're in luck. ITV are making one. It's called Theresa May, the Accidental PM, promising the most frank and revealing account yet of her 3 years, from 2016 to 2019. Carol Midgley, the Times' TV critic, has already cleared her diary so she can watch every minute of it. Carol, are you excited?
As you can imagine, I cannot wait. I mean, it's going to be in June, so they've given us quite a lot of time to get excited about it, haven't they, by announcing it now.
It's like it's like those early Barbie trailers, isn't it? You know, just to get everyone talking about it.
Well, but I am wondering, just because I have to watch a lot of these documentaries, what the best, you know, everyone starts now, what the trailer will look like, what the best bits at the beginning. Every documentary now, it's mandatory, has to start with a best bits compilation, where there's like juicy sound bites. But what they're going to have there? Because the one we've just had about Boris Johnson, the rise and fall of Boris Johnson, was four episodes, four times 1 hour. And at the beginning, it was all like killer sound bites, such as the biggest liar that this country has ever seen, and not a man of conviction, and what a coward. But what's this going to say? Like, she always told the truth. A woman of conviction. She never. You know, you can't imagine those killer sound bites coming together for a good headline, you know, on a TV review.
Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed.
Yeah. Strong and stable.
Brexit means Brexit.
I'm
going to bring forward a third meaningful vote. Are you excited,
exactly,
Mavie?
I mean, my heart sinks listening to that. I think the difficulty of it is that so many of these series, you know, it's all about the character at the centre of it all. And Theresa May, bless her, was just sort of always a bit robotic. I do think, though, in a way, that period was fascinating. You know, so our colleague Tim Shipman has written about it, and it's very compelling. And looking back now, you do sort of think that's the moment, it feels, that we sort of we started being in a state of perma-crisis.
Yeah.
You know, I remember before Theresa May, you know, people used to put out clips from Malcolm Tucker from the thick of it, and it felt sort of funny and extraordinary. And now it always feels like an understatement of just how bad things are. You know, he doesn't even begin to you know, express the fury that everyone's feeling. And I sort of feel like that's when it all began. And we haven't really sort of looked back on that period enough. And it, I mean, in a way, it was quite dramatic. It was vote after vote after vote. It was the government almost collapsing daily.
The first time, and I feel bad because I'm still halfway through your... I'm just going to totally disagree with it. I think it's totally pointless. Matthew, let's bring Matthew in. Because the problem is, like, with not what you want is a sort of, well, explain something to me. There was a good series I watched recently about the miners' strike. And obviously know what happened and, you know, the result of it. But telling the stories along the way and how you got there was interesting. But the trouble is, by the end, nothing had happened by the time she stopped being Prime Minister. So it doesn't matter.
There's no great moment of change.
It doesn't matter what happened along the way. Matthew.
Is it a documentary or drama?
It's documentary, yeah.
I mean, look, if so long as she does lots of interviews and is open and candid, or more than
famously,
she's going to say she's not famed for her candor, sadly.
But I'm not representative because I'm very interested in politics. I'll find that quite fascinating to deconstruct what was a completely remarkable period in British politics. I mean, you just saying, what was it, meaningful vote 3?
Yeah.
It did feel surreal and somehow almost as if we became detached from ourselves as a nation. I can't make my mind up about Theresa May. On the one hand, I don't know if anyone else feels conflicted. I did feel that staying on as a backbencher, not trying to make an absolute fortune, commercialising her former role, I kind of admired that.
And she made some of her best speeches as a backbencher.
She did.
After being Prime
Great
Minister.
Great critiques almost from the backbench.
Like, yeah. Almost like she shouldn't have been Prime Minister. Anyway, Carol,
that's one lesson to take from it.
We'll put the date in the diary in June, Carol. We'll have a watching party, whatever they call it. Everyone get together. I imagine they'll be showing it in pubs. Manveen Rana with Matthew Syed there. And of course, you can catch Manveen on the Story podcast wherever you're listening to this, and catch Matthew in the Times and the Sunday Times with your subscription at thetimes.co.uk. Up next is the Focus Group.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Thing.
Yeah, every month here on Times Radio, we convene a focus group of real voters to assess how the government's getting on and see what matters to people outside the Westminster bubble. As ever, we are joined by James Johnson, former number 10 pollster, now runs Jail Partners. Hi, James.
Hello, Matt.
Let's start, as we always do, James, with what is a focus group and what is it not?
Absolutely, Matt. So a focus group is not intended to be representative. That's rule number one. We're not saying that this group of people think a certain way across the country. It's only 8 people we spoke to. That's for polls, which have a sample size of 1,000, 2,000, maybe even more. What a focus group is about is digging into the detail of those polls. It's about getting more of the nuance. It's about understanding potentially why people are saying the things they're saying. And of course, also for politicians and parties to try and test messages and policies ahead of election time.
And we quite often have done Conservatives, we've switched to Labour. Last month we did Conservatives who were leaning towards reform. So who do we hear from this month?
So we're going Conservative to Lib Dem switchers. And we're speaking to them in three constituencies, Chelmsford, Torbay and Herefordshire. So we've, you know, we've left the red wall. We've gone to the Tory shires to see whether there's anything behind this. What is behind this Tories and Lib Dem shift that we see in the polls?
Very good. Okay, here we go then. Let's dive in. You'll be pleased. Nick has already been in touch to say morons. So well done, Nick. You're the first person to describe the focus group as morons before we've even got there. So that's you win this week's prize. Do let us know what you think. 0333 003 2353 if you want to WhatsApp about this. This is the group of Conservative voters now leaning towards the Lib Dems. And James started off by asking him, how is the government getting on?
I think they're appalling, if I'm honest. And I think they're doing everything they can because they know there's a general election coming along. And I think it's too little, too late.
They are appalling. I think exactly what you said, it's all now spin and PR. Rishi's been, for me, the worst by far at present. But I just, there's just this under-delivering and over-promising, and it makes a mockery of the country, to be honest. And I think he's achieved absolutely nothing. Now, some might say on this call that Boris Johnson failed, but there was quite a lot of good that he did, and probably people are going to shout me down saying what, but I don't know. I personally could relate to Boris at the beginning. Yes, he made some mistakes, but for Rishi, he's just been a washout. I think he's pathetic.
My personal view is I mean, it's hard to pick between Liz Truss and Boris in terms of just how low we can go. They're not capable of doing anything. They don't know how to deliver anything. They don't have a vision of anything. And they're trying to fix problems we don't have whilst ignoring all the problems that we do have.
They're firefighting all the time and they don't seem to make any pragmatic decisions or seem to be much common sense.
Well, I agree with most people. It's appalling. I just don't even know where to begin.
They just don't want to take any accountability for everything. I think they spend a lot of time just worrying about keeping in power. I think they just run around not really doing anything, spending hundreds of thousands of pounds on helicopters to go to Rwanda.
Merging helicopters to Rwanda, I particularly enjoyed. Now, James, the words that stood out there, a lot of the use of the word appalling, which actually came up again and again throughout the, 90 minutes the group lasted. And is there any way back for a Prime Minister described as pathetic?
Sounds like the sort of parents' evening from hell, doesn't it? I think it's going to be. Look, I think this is really, really tough. I mean, you can get a. We've said before. We've talked before on the podcast, Matt. You know, Rishi Sunak was always seen as rich for the first sort of 6 months or so of his premiership, but they had a sense that maybe he was competent. They now think he's not only rich but also incompetent, and that's a really hard thing to come back from. Yeah, if you have, you know, people say, "Oh, he's uncaring, but maybe he's quite good." You're okay, but when it becomes useless, waste of space, pathetic, like we hear here. Actually, I think you probably get kicked out of the parents' evening if you gave such brutal feedback. Then it becomes really hard to claw things back. So, look, perhaps Rishi Sunak and the Conservatives, by having a negative campaign on Keir Starmer, can win some voters back. But it's hard to see now, barring a major policy shift or change or win, how they claw back Rishi Sunak's reputation.
So let's try and drill into this a bit then. What is it that's made them change their minds? They all voted Conservative in 2019. So what's made them change their mind about the party?
Probably the leadership of it. I don't know. And at the time, it was probably the best party to vote for at the time. So, or what I felt was the best party to vote for at the time. And then I guess we've had a lot go on since 2019 with COVID, et cetera, and all that sort of stuff.
I don't mean to sound like really sort of old, but just when you really, what people said they meant and they did, you know, my word is my bond, and you don't see it very often. And the whole thing that happened with COVID, the parties,
the lockdown and the government giving their friends millions of pounds.
I voted. I mean, a lot of people are the same. So it was all about Brexit and what was happening then. So you voted accordingly. And then we've got COVID came along and they had one thing, one main job, and they still got it wrong.
The change of leaders is a mockery. I think I was with Rachel. I believed in Boris at the start. He was running the country in an impossible time. I think I always used to vote Conservative, probably because generally, you know, my parents did. Other people, it seemed a good, seemed to be quite a good government at times back in the day of God, Margaret Thatcher, and it's just so wildly different now. I've seen my shopping bills go up. I've seen my taxes rise. I've seen my interest rates go up. I've got friends, you know, in high-level jobs that usually wouldn't have to worry about money or wouldn't have to budget, to be honest. They could go and buy what they wanted, you know, in Sainsbury's, Waitrose, it wouldn't matter. Now they're going to Lidl because they can't afford what they used to. As time's gone on, everyone's really kind of pulling at the purse strings.
There's a famous quote, wasn't there, by David Cameron, who got caught on the radio, he left his mic on, talking about how corrupt Africa is and other nations in terms of their government. But actually, I don't think we're not doing that great ourselves.
We're not far behind.
Wow. I mean, that shopping list of reasons, it's hard to think that anyone could address all of those, James. I was writing them down. So there's lockdown, the pandemic, Brexit, the breakdown of family ties, Margaret Thatcher, inflation, tax, interest rates, shopping bills, switching from Waitrose to Lidl. I mean, we could tell exactly the demographic of Tories leaning towards Lib Dems in these areas. But you put all that together and you just think, well, it's no wonder they're so far behind in the polls.
Yeah, absolutely. Three quick things that came out of that for me. Firstly, parties, Partygate, still there. It might seem like distant memory in Westminster, but still at the front of these voters' minds. Number two, certainly more focus on the cost of living and frustrations about that, sort of the Conservatives' general values than perhaps we saw with the Conservative to Reform switchers last month, who are more concerned about immigration. That tallies, of course, with the polling on these groups. And third, and I think this is an important point worth noting, is that we obviously, a lot of people might be listening to this and thinking, well, a couple of years ago, even a year ago, you know, people would say about the COVID pandemic, well, look, they had an unprecedented situation. You know, they were in a difficult lot. You know, we should give them some benefit of the doubt. That has evaporated. And digging into the group more, it was pretty clear that that had evaporated because of a lack of delivery. They said, you know, I used to have that empathy, one lady said, but now nothing's been delivered and I've lost that trust. So that's also gone because they don't feel like the government's, they don't only feel like the government's bad, they also don't feel like it's doing anything.
And I suppose there's that classic thing, you know, somebody mentioned Margaret Thatcher there, but the sense that if you thought the government said what it was going to do and then it did it, you didn't even necessarily agree often with every single individual item of what they were doing. But, you know, in part, you know, the Labour Party got re-elected in 2001, 2005 on the promise of, well, we've said we were going to do that, we've done that, now we're going to do this. And you sort of build up that sense of momentum, which is clearly, partly because of Brexit and then the pandemic, has been lost. And so then Rishi Sunak has his five pledges, but he's not meeting any of them, or meeting one out of the five. So even when he does give himself a shopping list of things to do, he doesn't manage to land it. Well, here we are then. This is the group. Remember, these are people who voted Conservative in 2019, now leaning Lib Dem, asked to sum up Rishi Sunak in a word.
Uninspiring, unreliable and flaky.
I put weak and out of touch.
Unsuccessful.
I say he's deeply disappointing and untrustworthy.
Waste of space.
Privileged, useless and untrustworthy.
I would say he doesn't have the gravitas to really push this country forward.
A caretaker of the untruths.
Now, a caretaker of the untruths is one of the best lines we've had at a focus group for a long time, James.
Yes, and you may note that these respondents, Tory to Lib Dem switchers in the Tory shires, they're generally a bit more high information than other voters we speak to. Yeah, look, I mean, there's really not much to say about that, is there? I mean, he started off, and we did this in our year review at the start of the year, Matt, if you remember.
Yeah.
We listened back to, you know, when Rishi Sunak became Prime Minister, started off with a bit of that genuine goodwill. And I think that's the shocking thing about the last few, you know, months and last year, is how avoidable this was for the Conservatives. Yes, the brand was in serious trouble after Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, but there was goodwill towards Rishi Sunak. But through a lack of action, through what the voters see as weakness, and through a public presentation that hasn't really appealed either, plus falling short on those promises that he said no ifs, no buts, he'd deliver, people are saying, well, what's the point of him then?
Yeah, and it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough to come back from that. Well, if they don't like Rishi Sunak, would, as some Tory MPs have been discussing, would they support the idea of replacing him?
Well, they've done it a million times, haven't they, in the last few years? So I think, you know, you can't keep throwing, you know, bad fruit after bad fruit.
Public will get no say anyway. It's going to be, you know, in-house. They'll decide. And again, they'll give us what they think is the best option, but it's too little too late, really.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel springs to mind. There's nothing left down there, so what's the point?
Well, they might throw David Cameron back out there again. Who knows?
Oh, God.
It doesn't matter how many times you rearrange the deck chairs, the ship's going down.
There's no point changing it. The route is wrong. The route needs to come out. It's damaged and it's rotten.
Rotten roots, scraping the barrel, and that well-known phrase, you can't keep throwing bad fruit after bad fruit.
And the deck chairs, of course.
Of course, let's not forget deck chairs. Yeah, don't. You need to pull out the roots of your deck chairs to stop your fruit going bad.
Exactly. I mean, look, it was... I think this really shows the quandary the Conservatives are in. There's no easy fix. If you get, you know, Penny Mordaunt in or Kemi Badenoch or whoever it might be, you know, some Conservatives might be tempted by that, but I think the voters would then think, okay, these people were already mad. They've now gone completely mad.
The very act of changing will be so absurd to lots of people that it doesn't matter who you change to.
I think so. Look, it is a hard one to call because obviously, you know, people are, especially in focus groups, are particularly bad at predicting their own reactions to things. And, you know, maybe come the election, if you had a more popular leader, things would be a little bit different. But I think what's clear is that it would not change the fundamentals. Because the key thing with these voters is the trust has gone. And that is largely because of changing leaders so many times and it going wrong so many times. That it feels hard to see why doing that again would help.
Right, now let's turn our attention to what they think of the other lot. This is what the group had to say about Keir Starmer.
I just find him a bit fake. Every time you ever hear anything about him, he's always, after the events happened, if it went right, I'd have done that. If it went wrong, it's not how I would have done it. And it's just like, to have him at the forefront of something, I just don't know. No.
Not to be trusted.
He's not strong enough. He needs to, I don't know, beat his own drum.
He can talk a good game. He's a lawyer. He's got swag, but yeah, I don't feel the actions follow.
I put sensible, uncontroversial, safe and bland.
I think he's like a worthy supply teacher.
For me, he's an argumentative, cringy car salesman.
Oh, I can't write them down fast enough, James. Worthy supply teacher, safe, bland, argumentative. I mean, it's the full gamut there for Keir Starmer.
Yeah, it is. And there's a really interesting dynamic going on here, Matt. And I'm going to turn that rather bleak rundown of comments on Keir Starmer into a positive for him because... you know, they don't like him. These aren't natural Labour voters. These are Tories, Lib Dem switchers, and they've got all the same frustrations that we hear about him amongst the rest of the public. Which does mean that, you know, if Keir Starmer does win, he'll be winning unenthusiastically. But having said all of that, they're not horrified by the prospect of Keir Starmer. They're not talking about him like they were talking about Corbyn in 2019. And that's really, really important because one of the conservative messages to this group will be vote for the Lib Dems and you get Starmer as Prime Minister. These people aren't that excited by the prospect, but compared to Rishi Sunak, they'll take it. And that's a really important shift compared to what it was like in 2019 where Corbyn was really sort of toxic for them.
That's so interesting that they're not horrified by the prospect of him becoming Prime Minister. But like you said, these were specifically selected when the Independent Market Research Group, it's not Times Radio, it's not James, Independent Market Research Group goes out to find people asks them how they voted and how they think they might vote now, and then we take the ones who were Conservative last time, now leading Lib Dem. So this is them explaining why that's who they're planning to vote for.
I want to vote Liberal Democrat because they want to get back to basics.
And I quite like Lib Dems at the moment, which I never thought I'd say. I've voted Labour. I last voted Conservative. At this stage, I quite like their policies so far, what I've seen. I can relate to them. They're everyday people.
I've been sort of impressed by Liberal Democrats in the sense of it sounds quite basic. They seem to get things done as to what they sort of say they'll do.
So I would be Liberal Democrats and, in one word, a tactical vote, because let's face it, pretty sure that they're not going to be running the country. So I'm unfortunately going to be Labour or Conservative. I voted for both of them. They've both failed.
I believe it's time for a change, isn't it? I'm not a massive fan of Labour and Keir Starmer, if I'm really honest with you. Conservatives have done absolutely nothing, so where else do you go?
Liberal Democrats, I think everything what everyone has said, I just think they seem to have a moral core.
But I think there's some good Lib Dem MPs and some good Lib Dem ideas, but my main reason is tactical. I want the Tories gone.
And James, sometimes when people talk about tactical voting, it's sort of as if the voters aren't always sure what they're doing. This is a bunch of smart people who know exactly what they're doing. They accept they don't know everything about the Lib Dems. They might not like everything about them, but if they know where they live and they know if they want the Tories out, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think that's right, Matt. And for the Lib Dems, there was also a sense that, you know, they had a good local brand. It's really interesting, you know, when you ask about the party brand of any other party, even smaller parties, they often come and hone in on the leader. But with Lib Dems, it's this sort of general sense that they're quite good people. And that's a testament to the power of a lot of local Lib Dem representatives, especially in these areas where they've had an impact for quite a few years now. Look, the Lib Dems have become the nice guys. You probably don't want them running the government, but they're nice enough to vote for if you're discontented, as these people are, with the Conservatives, and that's enough for the Lib Dems.
Interesting, though, that, you know, go back 10 years, the Lib Dems were the bogeymen. You know, they tripled tuition fees, they propped up the Tories, they'd gone along with austerity. You know, the Tories took all the benefits of the tax cuts or whatever else they were promising, and it was the Lib Dems who were the bogeymen. I suppose in the end, yeah, when you're working your way through bogeymen, you end up back at the top of the list again if you hang around long enough.
Yeah, I think that's right. Brands can shift, especially in these seats, you know, especially the people from Torbay here. You know, these were places where, you know, Cameron really swept them up in 2015 by squeezing that Lib Dem vote. So people sort of went Lib Dem to Tory, and now perhaps they're going back to the Lib Dems again several years later.
OK, but that was why they're voting for the Lib Dem. What do they actually know, though, about Lib Dem leader Ed Davey?
Likeable, decent, from what I've seen so far.
Ed Davey is a kind of name that's always been around, but also I think he actually looks at the bigger picture.
I think it sort of comes across as pretty reliable.
So, I mean, the only thing I can remember him for is the Horizon scandal. And unfortunately, that put me right off of him.
Well, I don't know a great deal about him as much, but I do. He seems a little bit more down to earth, but he's not in the forefront of any sort of media, is he, like the others at the moment?
I've seen him around, but I don't know enough about him or what he's done. He seems to be sort of on the side, in the wings, as it were.
Are there any other Lib Dems that come to mind?
Well, Nigel Farage was part of the Lib Dems sort of a few years ago.
Daisy Cooper was on. I've seen her a few times.
I can't say, if I'm being honest, I can't say that I know very many.
Right, James, we need to address the first question. For the point, in the interest of accuracy, as far as we're aware, Nigel Farage has never been in the Lib Dems.
Indeed. You know, again, it's that reminder of, you know, you can spend years and years and years trying to build a brand for yourself, and somebody in Chelmsford will still think you were in the Lib Dems.
I mean, it is what it is, what they think about Ed Davey. You know, he's a nice chap. Don't know much about him. Post offices. Lovely. On the big question, though, of the EU, and clearly Brexit was a big part of the Lib Dems campaign last time. They were the party of rejoin. They're not making that case now. What do the focus group think they should do?
Go back in.
I think we should go back in, but I can't imagine that we can. Particularly,
they won't want us. Well, they might not want us, but then actually they might actually think, well, actually, maybe we've just got to say, look, didn't work out. Let's just get back together again. Relationships, sometimes people get back together when they never thought they would.
We were on a break.
So that's what they think about rejoining the EU. What about rejoining the government? Should the Lib Dems go back into coalition?
Because I just think they need more strength.
I would personally rather they weren't in coalition. What I would prefer to see is them as an opposition. So, I mean, it's almost certain looking at it that Labour's going to get in. Mm-hmm. And I think if you had someone like the Lib Dems in there, like, pushing for something a bit more radical, then I think that's where they'd be best.
I agree with you.
Yeah, no, same.
I agree with John.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, so do I. I agree with that.
James, I mean, obviously what they say before an election could change afterwards, but is this the sort of thing that the Lib Dems will be mindful of as they go into the election?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, we've sort of heard Davey, I believe, rule out, sort of, you know, or start to rule out working with too closely with others. And I think he's probably right too. There is still a bit of that toxicity around the idea of what they did in coalition before. They probably don't want to remind voters of that. Look, you know, it also looks like one of those Tory squeeze messages they could deploy, which is, you know, the Lib Dems haven't got a chance of being in government. It's a wasted vote. That doesn't seem to necessarily work with these people either. Now, they are more high information, probably not the number one target for that message. But these voters know that they're probably not going to be in power.
Yeah, and actually, you know, it's not a wasted vote if you're a tactical voter who wants to get the Tories out, and that's what you need to do where you are. So that's what they might be thinking as well. Just finally, James, a fun question at the end. You asked them if there's anyone else from any walk of life who this group thought would do a better job of running the country.
Gareth Lineker.
Martin Lewis.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's a people person, isn't he?
I like that.
Can we have Morgan Freeman? I believe anything that man says.
Yeah. Marcus Rashford, he makes things happen.
Yes.
Oh, they were slightly better. I always think when somebody says Martin Lewis, oh, couldn't you not be a bit slightly more imaginative? Morgan Freeman, that's a slightly left field, but why not, James?
Yeah, and earlier in the podcast, we also had someone talk about Justine Greening. So, it's the whole suite of people. I do always think, you know, think about Boris Johnson, think about Rishi Sunak when he was, you know, plus 50 approval or whatever it was. You know, we had people saying Rishi Sunak is the ideal prime minister a few years ago. Perhaps Martin Lewis, in reality, in Downing Street, might face a tough job.
Well, James, it was a brilliant group and a real insight to an under-discussed group. I mean, because the headline polls, they don't show that there are many direct switches Tory to Lib Dem, but it'll be interesting to see what happens in those seats when it really matters. James Johnson there from JL Partners with a focus group of people who voted Conservative in 2019, now leaning Lib Dem in Chelmsford, Herefordshire and Torbay. That's it for this month's Times Radio Focus Group with JL Partners. If you want to catch up on any previous ones, just search for Times Radio Focus Group wherever you're listening to this. I'm off now for Easter and a little break. I'll be back April the 8th, but don't worry, Patrick Maguire looking after you for most of next week. But for now, for me, Matt Cholley, it's goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.